tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Common Ground. This is a place where you get real conversations, real connections, and absolutely no filter. Good day, everyone. I hope everyone today is having a wonderful day. Hope y'all having a wonderful week. Okay, so today, this topic that I'm about to talk about is actually very special to me. Okay, so if we all have been paying attention, y'all have been seeing what's going on in Washington, D.C. Okay, so, you know, I grew up about 15, 20 minutes away from D.C., the Baltimore, I was like really close to the Baltimore-Washington Parkway. You know what I mean? My house was right there by the damn parkway. I could just leave my driveway, make a right turn. I was on the parkway heading to D.C. Okay, so today's episode will be called D.C. on the Watch, from Banneker to the Barricades, right? And later on, we're going to discuss about Banneker a little bit. But I just want to know with all the stuff that's going on in Washington, D.C. And, you know, when we see this man attacking these black cities, you know what I mean? I really feel a way when I hear when these things are going on, right? Because they act like the only type of cities that commit high crime is black cities, which is a damn lie. Okay? I looked it up. All right? A lot of white cities, too, commit high crime, right? They have a lot of high crime area in a lot of white area cities as well. Okay? So like I said, today I'm going to talk a little bit about the history of Washington, D.C. Talk about that a little bit just so, you know, get into certain things, you know. I know, like, the National Guard, the FBI, that's out there doing all of that stuff. They don't really want – I don't feel it. But a lot of them don't really want to be out there, man, doing it. When they could be doing other things that they actually – that they sign up for. The FBI didn't sign up to patrol the damn streets. They're not a beat cop. The National Guard didn't sign up to walk the streets. That's not their damn job. You know what I mean? Ain't nothing going on for to warrant that. But anyway, man, that's crazy to me. But anyway, so let's discuss, right? The vision for a capital, okay? So the political compromise of 1790, known as the Residence Act, set the groundwork for a new federal city. Okay, so 1790, right? So, you know, by the time we just had maybe a few presidents happen. So now they want to have to find a capital for the whole United States, right? So these people start thinking, starting to brainstorm. We need to come up with something, a capital, you know what I mean, for our nation that we are building. So Southern leaders wanted the capital in a location favorable to them, while Northern leaders wanted debt assumption. The Potomac River site was chosen for its geography and symbolism. George Washington personally selected the location. The idea was to keep the capital independent from any single state's influence, which was good. A permanent seat of government would demonstrate stability to foreign nations. Land was ceded by Maryland and Virginia. Okay, so they took piece of that part I never knew at the time, right? That they actually took piece of our Virginia land and piece of Maryland land. Think about it, right? Piece of land to make a whole new capital, right? You know what I mean? So basically, they could appease the South a little bit and appease the North a little bit, right? Because, you know, Virginia, I guess, to me, I think Virginia is the start of the South, right? If it comes from the North, right? Virginia is the start of the South. And then, of course, Maryland is still the North, right? So the design aimed to rival European capitals in grandeur. Early leaders wanted a balance of practicality and symbolism. The city's very creation was political, was a political statement about unity, right? So when they created D.C. at the time, right, they wanted to unify the country. You know what I mean? The South and the North, all that stuff, right? They wanted, okay, we're all one. You know what I mean? We're all going to be at one. We're all going to, you know what I'm saying, vote as one. We're all going to do one thing. So we're going to make this right here, Washington, D.C., the capital of it, right? So as time went on, Lutton Font's grand design. Lutton Font's grand design. So Pierre Charles Lutton Font, a French-American engineer, was hired in 1791. So he envisioned broad avenues radiating from key points. So he envisioned broad avenues, right? Radiating from key points. Public squares and circles were strategically placed for gathering spaces. So Lafont prioritized sight lines to monuments and government buildings. Right? So his plan emphasized both function and beauty. Despite a rose with commissions over landowners' interests, Lafont was dismissed in 1792 after refusing to compromise, right? You know, sometimes the French people could be a little hard-headed, I guess. They ain't trying to compromise with the decision makers, right? So Andrew Ellicott revised the plan, keeping much of Lafont's vision. The core street plan remains visible in today's DC. So think about it, from 1792, most of everything is still visible, you know what I'm saying, from back in those days, right? But Lafont, he was dismissed though, man, because he's not gonna compromise on how things are gonna go. I guess you can understand that part too. You know what I mean? That hey, I'm the one that's designing this dagger thing. Right, let me do me. You hired me to do a job. Let me do my job, right? You understand me? So the powers to be were like, you know what though? Since we can't come to an agreement, you got to go. Point blank, you got to go. Okay? Since we can't come in on in a damn agreement. Okay. So now, right? Enter this black man. Okay? Benjamin Banneker. Benjamin Banneker's contribution to Washington, D.C. You understand me? Now, I grew up, like I said, I grew up in Maryland, 15, 20 minutes away from D.C., right? And you're telling me that these things are in the history books and they don't teach us these types of stuff? Imagine me as a young black student going to school and I'm learning about a black man helped to design Washington, D.C. You know how that would make me feel as a young black kid going to this school? Especially me being a foreigner coming to this country. You know what I mean? How that made me feel like, damn, a black man designed D.C.? You know what I mean? Helped to design D.C.? Wow. So Benjamin Banneker was a free black man born in 1731 in Maryland. Okay, so he's from Maryland. So think about this, right? He's a free black man born free. You know what I mean? During the height of slavery, the man was born free in Maryland. And he was self-taught in mathematics and astronomy. You know what I mean? Think about it, man. Math. These subjects are very hard. And you actually teach yourself how to do these things, especially back then, when a lot of black people were still enslaved and wasn't allowed to read? Oh, man. Do you know how great that stuff was, man? You know what I mean? A black man that self-taught himself math and astronomy. So he knew a thing or two, right? So he joined Andrew Ellicott's survey team in 1791. So this black man, Benjamin Banneker, right? He helped to design this beautiful city that we know as Washington, D.C. As Washington, D.C., the beautiful city. You know what I mean? Like I said, D.C. was, a beautiful city, point blank. You know, the design, where the White House is located, the monument, you know what I mean? That's a great tourist attraction. Plenty of time I go to D.C., and I take friends, people that, you know what I mean, that I know that never been to D.C., I will take them, you know what I mean, just to show what D.C. is all about, man. I love doing stuff like that. You know what I mean? We park the car, or we might leave the car at the hotel, I'll just catch a train or something. I enjoy the day. Yeah. So, responsible for the key astronomical observations to fix the boundary points, right? So he was there to help to fix all the boundary points, make sure everything is pretty good. So he used a high precision clock and star clocks for calculations. He worked on defining the 10-mile square boundary. So his role was scientific, but not artistic or urban planning. The myth that he recreated law enforcement plan likely arose decades later. So he didn't recreate it, he just helped to enhance it. So still, his participation was groundbreaking for a black man in that era. The Banneker's legacy remained as a symbol of black intellectual achievement. So think about it, right? Back in those days, man, you know what I mean? Oh, so much smart, intelligent black people were back then. And you know, and think about the situation, right? Even after slavery. Imagine, right, if the white supremacists, right, the racist people, would have just left black people alone to tend their business. Because let's think about black folks, we mind their business, all right? To tend their daggum business, right? Let's leave this alone. Imagine in today's time how far has black people would have came. I mean, don't get me wrong, they've came real far, but imagine even further where they could have been if they would have just left black folks alone to handle their business, man, to do this stuff, take care of the family, all of that great things, huh? But this black man back then, you know what I'm saying, and then he was born in 1731, right? So, and then in 1791, he did this stuff. The man was like 60 years old. Man, think about it. This man was 60 years old, you know what I mean, doing this work. Trust me. How many 60-year-old right now, you still have a lot of energy? Because I guarantee right now, doing this type of work is a lot of, it puts in a lot of energy to do this work, right? But at 60 years old, this man was doing his thing. I'm telling you, man, to me, that's a great milestone achievement of how black people were back then. You know what I mean? Back then, with little resources that they have, right? You know what I mean? With little stuff that they have. Imagine if, you know what I mean, they would have left us alone and let us do a thing. Damn, right? These type of things, they should be, especially in a school with majority of black people, right? These type of things that they should be teaching in the schools, man. The things that black people have contributed in the United States, right? The only thing that they teach us in school, Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks. We didn't know nothing else about them there. You know what I'm saying? That's even Malcolm X, who came there over a couple hundred years later, right? You know what I mean? They didn't teach us those type of things in school when I was in school. You know, you understand me? So when I learn about these type of things, right, about this black man doing his thing, that make me proud. That make me proud. And I love to hear stuff like this, man. I love to hear things like this. You know what I mean? And I'm gonna tell you this too, right? That I'm not the type of person. I'm a grown man, right? But when they say about getting news from TikTok, right? A lot of the stuff that I learned from other people talking about it on TikTok, to be honest with you. But what I like to do, though, when I hear something, if it interests me, I'm going to listen. And then what I'm going to do, once I'm done whatever, listening to it, I'm going to Google it to make sure it's accurate, right? Because I also have people on TikTok that spills mis and disinformation. They do, right? I like to hear things that's factual, whether I like to hear it or not. You know what I mean? And when I hear stuff like this, I'm going to do my damn research to find out, hey, damn, that's great. You know what I mean? Trust me. So now, let's move forward, right? Early DC, you know, from 1800 to 1865, right? So in 1800, DC officially became the capital, right? The capital, right? Washington, D.C. became the capital in 1800. So the population included politicians, enslaved laborers, free blacks, and immigrants. Slavery was legal until 1862. You hear that, right? Slavery was legal until 1862. But most of America didn't know about slavery until 1865. Now, that's crazy to me. So enslaved people built part of the Capitol and the White House. Right? So enslaved people built parts of the Capitol and the White House. Right? Helped to build the White House. So free black communities developed in areas like Foggy Bottom and Shaw. So as time goes on, right? You know what I'm saying? Free black people started building their own little communities. And now DC was under Congress direct control with no local government. Now, time went on. As we all know, they taught this in school, right? The War of 1812 saw the British burn key buildings, man. Right? And the White House was part of it, right? Burn on these damn buildings. Because the British, they probably was hating on America anyway. Because America was getting too big for them. You know what I'm saying? America got the damn independence. You know what I'm saying? Some years before, right? And British were like, you know what now? Americans getting too damn big for the damn British, man. Let me teach that a lesson. You see what I'm saying? That's why the War of 1812 happened, I guess. I'm just saying. Right? So growth was slow compared to other cities. Civil War transformed DC into a military and political hub. So even back then, right? Civil War transformed DC into a political hub, and emancipation brought a wave of freedom seeking opportunities, man. You know, because DC, I'm telling you right now, at the time back then, DC had a lot of great opportunities for work, you know what I mean? For work for people to really strive, you know? In DC, even, you know what I'm saying, the cost of living wasn't that expensive in DC at the time, right? You know what I mean? People could probably find a decent job, you know what I mean? Pay the little bills. And they're fine, you know? Trust me. DC was a thriving city. Brand new city. Think about it. 1800, right? So in about 6-5 years, right? DC has been really doing good. You know what I mean? Washington, DC has been doing really, really good. Right? So, as time went on, the segregation and growth from 1865 until 1940. So, post-Civil War Reconstruction brought federal jobs to D.C., right? So, right after the Civil War, you know what I mean? The Reconstruction, that brought, you know what I'm saying, jobs to D.C. Then guess what? Jim Crow laws enforced racial segregation, man. This daggone Jim Crow laws. You can't let people be. You know what I'm saying? Let them do the job, right? You know what I'm saying? Black and white people don't need to hang out. But, well, why are we going to segregate against each other? Huh? But the Jim Crow law brought all that crap back. I mean, all the segregation to the country. Then U Street, right? U Street in D.C. emerged as a center of black culture and business, man. Think about U Street, right? Emerged as a center of Black culture and business. Oh, my goodness. You know what I mean? So even a small part of D.C., you know what I'm saying? Black people wanted to have a piece of the American pie, right? And then later on, right, Howard University became a hub for Black intellectual life. How would you? I ain't gonna lie to you. When I was a young man in my 20s, I live in Maryland, right? Me and my homeboy, me and my buddy, shoot, we used to drive to Howard University just to check out some chicks, right? Just to holler at some girls back in those days, okay? That's what we did, okay? Me and my friends. Because Howard University had some beautiful women, man. I was being real with you, right? I love some Howard University. I ain't lying. Man, we used to go there. Oh, man, me and my buddy, man. I just talk to girls. That's for fun. Just, we used to drive there, park a car, and just walk. Right? Yeah, those were fun days, man. So, the federal government was a major employer for Black clerks and laborers, man. You know what I'm saying? The federal government gave a lot of Black people jobs. You know what I'm saying? That they could be proud of, especially like a lot of Black men, man. Because the thing about men, period, but Black men, the best thing is when we can hold our head high and be able to take care of our family. You know what I mean? Be able to pay the bills at home without we stressing or without the wife stressing, right? Those are the type of things that we love. So when the federal government, you know, the federal government gave a lot of Black people jobs and stuff like that, to me that's a great thing, right? So segregation was visible in housing, schools, and public facilities. Right? The Great Depression slowed growth, but not segregation. The Great Depression happened, and it slowed a lot of growth, right? So Black middle class expanded despite barriers. Black middle class expanded, even back then. You know what I mean? Trust me, the thing about Black folks, Black people are very resilient people. They are. Only thing that they need is a chance to strive to make things happen for them and their families. That's it. Right? We as Black people, we don't care about hurting nobody or taking revenge on people. We're not like that. You know what I mean? You know, trust me, we are a God-fearing group of people. Most of us are a God-fearing group of people. So we don't really have to take revenge. We will forgive you before we take revenge on things. You know what I'm saying? Just want to be left alone. Right? So white neighborhoods remain largely closed to Black residents, right? And the social clubs and churches anchored Black communities. You know what I'm saying? Think about it, right? The clubs, social clubs, right? And churches, right? Anchored Black community where Black people can hang out with each other. You know what I mean? Look at it back then, how things were, right? The churches was involved in the Black community, right? You go to a nice little nightclub with a number of Black folks to have a good time. See what I'm saying? That was it, right? Have a great time back then, right? The Black people could see each other, could be seen, you know what I'm saying, with each other. Now, as time went on, right, then the Great Migration and White Flight. So, World War II created thousands of federal jobs in D.C. Southern Blacks moved to the city in large numbers. Damn, think about it. A lot of Black people start moving to D.C. in large numbers because they know the jobs are going to be there. The cost of living is not going to be that expensive. You know what I mean? And that time went on, right? Housing shortages led to overcrowding in Black neighborhoods, man. I mean, there wasn't enough housing back then, even to this day, right? You know what I'm saying? DC is not a big city, right? Only like 700,000 people in D.C. right now. You see what I'm saying? So, you know what I mean? So all it led to overcrowding, right? Then highway construction cut through Black communities, man. That's sad to me, right? That the government, man, when they was creating the highways, you know what I mean? They cut through so many Black communities just to be all the highway that we love to drive on, 95, 25, I-10. See what I'm saying? All of them highways, you know what I mean, was cut, right? Destroyed a lot of Black communities. And the federal government did that. And FHA policies made suburban homes accessible to whites, but excluded blacks, right? So the Fair Home Association, whatever, policies made suburban homes accessible to whites, but excluded most blacks, right? And white residents moved to the suburbs in Maryland and Virginia. So the black people were moving into D.C., white people moved out, right? Everywhere. You know what I mean? And even now, they actually want to move back into D.C. Because when you give a black community something, they're going to enhance that area somehow. And they did, right? And as time went on, black people started making D.C. better, right? And now companies want to move back into D.C. because of the labor that black people have done over the years. You understand me, right? So, as time went on, by the late 1960s, blacks made up the majority of D.C.'s population. By the late 1960s, right, black people made up majority of D.C. population. That's why they call Washington, D.C. today Chocolate City, right? Because of the majority black population, right? Chocolate City became a term of pride. It is a term of pride. You know what I'm saying? For black folks, you know what I mean? Because Washington, D.C., I'm going to tell you, man, Washington, D.C., to me, is a great city. You know what I'm saying? It's a great city, right? They have so much great history there. So in 1968, riots after Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination accelerated white flight. Again, I'm saying riot come, but white people move. White flight, gone, right? Now, economic disinvestment followed in many neighborhoods, right? So after, I guess after the riots, you know what I mean? People with money stopped investing in D.C. Yeah, I guess what started happening? People start struggling. Black people start struggling. You understand me? Black people start struggling. Because now, excuse me, there's no jobs. You know what I mean? When there's no jobs, there's going to be high crime rate, right? The high crime rate in Washington, D.C. because there was no damn job because people start pulling on the damn money. So these damn young black men, what they started doing because they were desperate and they were hungry. So they started robbing people, probably killing people back. Even you're killing people, all of that stuff, right? Unaliving people. You know what I mean? Because there's no one out there looking out for them to try to give these young men and young women jobs, right? It happened. I'm telling you. It happened. All right? Now, when I talk about the high crime rate, think about it, right? White folks move out, and mom moves to the suburbs of Maryland and Virginia. And then black people stayed in D.C., right? And then the rich people who got money stopped investing in D.C. So as time went on, D.C. started going down. You know what I mean? Right there where the White House is. I don't get it. And even to this day, I would never understand it, right? The White House is right there. I mean, that's where the President of the United States live, right? And you're telling me this damn beautiful city came down like that because they didn't want to invest in black people? You know what I mean? They didn't want to invest in black people. Sad to me, man. You know, trust me, very sad, right? So with all that, the 1980s came along with crime explosion, man. I'm telling you. Man, and this is my era right here. I remember this vividly, right? Crack cocaine arrived in D.C. in the mid-80s, right? And one of the biggest pusher of crack cocaine, his name, what's the damn dude's name now, right? But they used to call him the King of New York, right? Damn, what? Oh, I can't remember his name. But they call him the King of New York. I'm sorry, the King of DC. Because he brought so much drugs in his neighborhood, man. You know what I'm saying? He got caught up this time, and he just passed last year, right? So violent turf war broke out between the rival crews, man. I remember that like it was yesterday. I live in Maryland, and I'm hearing things going on in DC, right? My neighborhood wasn't safe either, right? But DC was worse. You know what I mean? Trust me, they got these. They used to have like how California got gangs. DC had crews. You know what I mean? They had the Park Road crew, all kind of different crews, man, in that DC, right? And all the stuff. You know what I mean? So, open air drug markets became common in some neighborhoods, man. Think about it. That's all the young black brothers knew how to hustle and sell drugs because people had forgot about these young brothers, you know what I mean? These young sisters, right? Right? Society has written these people off, and these people have nothing else to do, man, but sell drugs, right? But hustle, you know what I'm saying? But who put the damn, who planted the drugs inside these neighborhoods, right? Inside the damn neighborhood? Because black people don't own shit. Black people do not own nothing to bring the drugs in the neighborhood, huh? Who planted the damn drugs to kill our black folks? Come on, let's talk about it. This type of situation, this type of thing we need to address. We need to talk about, man. Because I think unless we address the past, the future's not going to get no better. Right? And homicide rose sharply, peaking in 1991 at 479 in D.C. Think about it, right? In 1991 in Washington, D.C., 79 people got murdered. And most of that murder case was because of drugs, man. Drugs, right? National media labeled D.C. as the murder capital. Think about that, man. The murder capital. Because the powers to be didn't give a damn. The powers to be don't care, right? All they want to do is lock up these black-ass people and throw away the damn keys instead of investing in these people, right? When there's poverty, they're going to be high crime. Well, no, that's common sense. When there's poverty, there will be high crime. You know what I mean? D.C., this beautiful city that was designed, that a black man helped to design, right? The beautiful city of Washington, D.C., that I came to love. You know what I mean? I came to love. And look how decent it was. I'll tell you something, man. I knew this like they were like back of my hand. Me, I knew how DC was back then when I was young. I would never ever go to DC by my damn self. Cause I knew if I go, somebody's gonna try me, and I'm not gonna have no backup. So if I was gonna go to DC at that time, you know what I mean? I'm gonna bring a couple buddies with me, man, just in case. If something pop off, you know, we can handle the damn business. Because, you know, because you hear about DC how people get unaliving in DC. You know what I mean? You go to these, some of these DC clubs back then, nightclubs back then where you're supposed to go and have a good time. You know what I'm saying? Enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? From a hard day's work, hard week of work, enjoy a nightclub for the weekend. Somebody getting murdered at a damn nightclub. You know what I mean? But nobody not addressing these type of issues, man, back then. The government, the politicians, they're not addressing these issues. So, okay, so corruption scandals hit the police and the city government. See that? The city government and police, all of them corrupt. Scandals hit them like wildfire. See what I'm saying? Gun violence became a daily reality in certain wards. Fear and mistrust between residents and police deepened. The residents don't like the damn police because the way the police treat the damn residents treat black folks, right? And they have every right not to like the police. I'll be skeptical of the police, right? So economic decline and unemployment fuel the crisis, right? Just like I said earlier, right? When there is less jobs, people would start committing crimes. See what I'm saying? And then eventually, right, if the people don't start working, right, don't get jobs, right, what are they going to do? They're not going to commit crime against each other. They're going to start going up in the white neighborhoods and start committing crimes too. Because they're going to rob every black people out there now, right? I'm telling you. Federal authorities began taking a larger role in law enforcement, right? So even back then, right, the federal authorities, just like what's happening today in D.C. I mean, yeah, today in Washington, D.C., where Donald Trump is doing. And you know the thing about it? I'm not a Donald Trump fan, but guess what, though? I don't mind that shit. I don't mind it. Because I look at it this way, right? If I'm a law-abiding citizen working in Washington, D.C., I go to work, come on, mind my damn business. And next thing you know, I'm hearing somebody getting robbed, somebody car getting stolen. You know, it doesn't have to be somebody getting murdered, right? But somebody's car getting stolen or any small petty crime, right? And I see the National Guard walking around, police walking around. I'll be honest with you, I'm going to feel safe. Me personally, I'm going to feel safe, right? You know what I mean? I know they come on TV, these people come on TV with stats. The crime rate is 20%, 26% down now. That's fine. But tell that to the old lady who just got robbed, right? The crime rate might be down, but the old lady who just got robbed, you know what I'm saying? She's not going to feel that way. All right. That's my little spiel right here. So police and decline of crime, right? That's what they say. So mid-1990s saw new policing strategies like community patrols, federal funding targeting drug enforcement, weed and seed programs try to remove criminals and rebuild communities. Crime began to decline by the 1990s. Homicides fell below 300 annually by 2000. Expanded incarceration rates had long-term social effects. Drug markets shifted or went underground. Economic investment returned to downtown areas. Some neighborhoods saw improved property values, and others remain mirrored in poverty and crime. Yeah, so still had a little bit of crime back then, right? So now, let's just, oh God, just like I said earlier, right, how the white people start moving back in. Gentrification and the new DC. Damn. Developers targeted historic but disinvested neighborhoods, right? Shaw, Columbia Heights, and H Street Northeast. Northeast D.C. is transformed. And I used to go to Northeast D.C. all the damn time. I remember a quick story about Northeast D.C. I had a girl that used to live in Northeast D.C. at the time. And when I would go visit her in Northeast D.C., I'm being honest with you, I'd always get nervous going to visit this damn chick. Because I'm always scared something was going to happen. All right? So rising rents push long-time residents out. Man, can't believe that. You know what I'm saying? Rising damn rents pushes people out. New businesses cater to wealthier, often white newcomers. Cultural landmarks closed or relocated. Black population percentage began to decline. Property taxes rose sharply in gentrifying areas. Crime continued to fall in many redeveloped zones. Tension grew over cultural erasure. The Chocolate City identity started to fade, man. So, the crime plateau and pandemic spike. So, early 2010s had relatively stable crime rates. Certain wards still had high violent rates. Opioid crisis emerged alongside traditional drug problems. COVID-19 pandemic disrupted schools and jobs. Youth crime surged during and after lockdowns. Carjacking and robberies increase, right? Carjackings and robberies increase. Homicide rose sharply in 2021 to 2023. 2023 violent crime was nearly 40% higher than 2022. Think about it, 40% higher. So, residents debated policing versus social services. Federal involvement became a renewed topic. Now, Trump intervention. Trump announced National Guard deployment to D.C. He claimed local leadership was failing on crime. Right? When he said that shit, right, to be honest with you, I do believe it's a distraction from the Epstein file. I really believe that, right? Because he don't want to put the Epstein file out there. You know what I mean? Put it out there. So he added federal officers from agencies like DHS and the FBI. Critics saw it as a political theater. Supporters said it brought needed manpower. Federal presence altered day-to-day policing. Some neighborhoods saw more patrols, others no change. I mean, I guarantee the black neighborhood that saw more patrols versus the white neighborhood. We all know that, common sense. The move reignited debate over D.C. statehood. Concerns about civil liberties arose. Trump's approach contrasting with Mayor Bowser's priority, right? So, Donald Trump just took over damn D.C. Didn't give a damn about the mayor. Mayor Muriel Bowser's position. Bowser had been mayor since 2015. Ooh, that's a long time to be the mayor. Emphasizing affordable housing and economic equity. Opposes federal overreach into local policing. Supports community-based and violence initiative. Warns about militarizing could harm police-community relations. Points to need to long-term solution. She argues for more resource in schools and job programs, which I agree with 100%. She criticizes federal focus on optics over outcomes. She balances public safety with civil rights concerns and maintains push for D.C. Statehood, right? Yeah, I do believe D.C. should be a damn state, though, man. I don't know why that made it a damn state. Because a lot of black people live there, huh? Maybe when the black people move out and white people move in, you know what I mean, majority of white, maybe they probably consider D.C. to be a state. I don't know why they don't, because I think personally, they might be afraid because if they make the state, right, they have to have at least one House of Representatives person. Got about 700,000 people there, right, and two senators. And if they have two senators, because D.C. is a Democratic city, so if they get two senators, the most likely will be a Democrat. By that time, Republicans won't probably not gonna allow that. So the root causes of youth crime, right? Poverty limits opportunities. Trauma from violence affects decision making. Absent parents due to work demand, right? Got a lot of parents got to work. Sometimes they got to work two jobs, man. Just pay the bills. It happens. I know my dad and mother, when I was a kid in Maryland, my mom worked two daggone jobs. And guess where I was, right? I had a job too at the time. I was working at Burger King, yes. But when I wasn't working, I was hanging out with my damn friends getting some kind of trouble. Okay. Peer pressure from gangs or older friends. Yeah, exactly. Peer pressure. I know a lot of older guys, man, back then used to peer pressure us to do a lot of things. Lack of after-school programs, man. That's what they need. After-school program for the young, for the youth. School disengagement or dropout, right? You know what I mean? Substance abuse exposure, distrust in police and institutions, few visible role models, easy access to illegal guns, right? You know, one thing I never knew until recently that D.C., you know, is not really an open carry state. You know, so you can have a gun legally, but you got kids sitting in the house. I never knew that the gun laws were so strict. You know what I'm saying? The gun laws in Washington, D.C., is one of the strictest in the nation, next to New York. Crazy to me. Okay, so what could work to me, right? Youth and family programs, man. They need some kind of program for the young children. Trust me. Paid apprenticeships in trade and tech. 24/7 youth activity centers with mentors. Imagine, man. And you know, and I always think about this, right, when it comes to mentorship, right? imagine, I'll say an OG now, right? That's been in jail, been there, done that, right? Come out of jail, and it's on straight and narrow with your life now. And they're mentoring the youth about not doing the same crime or the same things that they did. You know what I'm saying? I think that would be a great thing. Community sports leagues, they need that. I mean, the Boys and Girls Club, one of my buddies, man, used to go to the Boys and Girls Club back in Maryland. That was a good thing, play football and stuff like that, you know. Conflict resolution training in school, they definitely need conflict resolution, man. I think all schools need that, you know what I mean, to teach these young boys, man, to think with the mind and not this, okay? To teach them and talk to these young children. Subsidized child care for working parents, man. They definitely need that. Because the thing about it, daycare is very expensive, man. Damn, daycare is. And these parents could barely afford daycare, but they got to go to work. Restorative justice programs. Violent interpreter terms in hotspots, right? And local business job incentives. Mental health counseling access and partnership with faith-based organizations, man. I would say a partnership with a faith-based organization, for real. You know what I'm saying? All the great stuff that they really need, man, just to try to help these youth come out of this mess that they are in. That they are in. Because there's a lot of mess with these young children, man. You know what I mean? D.C. right now is the starting point of what's probably to come later on with other black cities. You understand me? A lot of black cities. And you black-ass mayors out there, y'all need to figure out a way to reduce damn crime if you're not doing it now. Seriously. You understand me, right? Figure out a way to do it, man. You know? There's so many things that could be done. Right? So now, let's talk about that call for community solution, right? Call to action, right? Crime prevention must be multi-layered, right? Crime prevention. I mean, we do need police. All that defunding the police and shit, put that shit out the damn door, man. We need the police. We do, right? We need churches involving, especially these damn black churches, man. They need to be involved in the community. They can't just be preaching every Sunday and not going in the community involving, you know what I mean? Try to feed somebody, get donation money, whatever, and get some of these hungry kids fed. Stuff like that, right? Try to get donations when people donate clothes. You know what I mean? And try to help all the young people, right? Police can't solve root causes alone. The police need help, man. The police officers need help, okay? Schools need funding for engagement program. Business can invest in the community. They can to give people jobs, right? And that will reduce crime. Residents can organize neighborhood watches like they used to back in the day. But I remember the damn neighborhood watches. Mentorship breaks cycles of violence. Federal and local government cooperation is key. The federal and local government, man. All the corruption shit that I talked about earlier, how D.C. was corrupt. That's why D.C. the way it is, because of the damn government. Part of it is because of the damn government, because they don't give a damn about poor people. Only thing they care about is aligning their damn pockets. That's all they care about. They don't give a damn about people struggling out there. You know what I'm saying? Mentorships breaks cycles of violence, right? Mentorships breaks cycles of violence. The federal and local government cooperation is key, man. Just like I said, right? Long-term planning beats short-term crackdown. Public input should guide police's policies, man. Public input should definitely guide policies, right? Hope for a future where D.C. is safe for all, man. Think about it, right? Hoping for that future where D.C. is safe for everybody, man. Because right now, what Donald Trump is doing right now is a temporary fix. This is just going to fix the problem temporary. We need a long-term solution to make things happen for the beautiful city of Washington, D.C., man. We need to really make great things happen for them. Do you understand me, right? You know what I mean? And the government needs to get involved. Churches need to get involved. The teachers need to get involved. So I'm saying? The community, right? Even get some of those former gang members or so-called thugs, right, who turned their lives around. Get them involved as well. You know what I mean? So we can reach the youth, man, the young children. But like Whitney Houston says, right, children are the future. But if things don't change in America, the children won't be the damn future, right? You know what I'm saying? America, because we need the young, we need the youth, we need them to be better in their life, right? To be better so they could be the future, to be able to take care, you know what I'm saying, the country like they should, right? The youth, right? The youth is very important. And we need to protect them. We need to take care of them. We need to take care of these young children so that they can be successful in life. So I'm saying? Be successful, okay? Because I'm telling you right now, man, if things don't change in America and the government don't start taking care of black people, I'm telling you right now, if the government doesn't start taking care of black people, you know what I'm saying? Black folks out there, they're going to figure out a way by the hook or by the crook. They're going to figure out a damn way to do stuff, to do things and make sure that their bellies are fed, right? Because they're hungry too, right? You know what I'm saying? The young black children are hungry too, man. Why don't you feed them with jobs? You know what I'm saying? Feed them. For real. Okay? And this is my time. Thank you for tuning into Common Ground. Until next time, keep the conversation going.
You're tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.